Firuzeh Duma's first book, Funny in Farsi, was nominated for a James Thurber Award. Now, she was born in Iran, but her family moved to the United States when she was 7. Her father was an engineer, had gone to Texas A&M, and once met Albert Einstein. She has a new collection of essays out now about her family life, which range from recollections of a pet monkey she had for about 3 hours to feeling out of place in college and touring Iowa with a woman who was once a hostage in Tehran. Her new book is Laughing Without an Accent, Adventures of an Iranian American at Home and Abroad. Firuzeh Duma, who's also an occasional NPR commentator, joins us now from Palo Alto, California. Thanks so much for being with us.
No, thank you for having me, Scott.
You are so funny. Why is it that when you came to the United States, you could never understand what was so funny about a pie in the face?
Well, you know, we used to watch television nonstop, and that was the one thing that we never understood, because a pie thrown in someone's face to us just seemed like such a terrible waste of a pie. And yet the laugh tracks would always tell us that it was supposed to be very funny. But I still don't get that.
I love the stories in here about your father, who just sounds like a wonderful man. He wears suits on an airplane, blue velour leisure suits for special occasions. But what's the blue leisure suit preoccupation that he has? Because, I mean, he asks you to shop for blue leisure suits all over.
A few years ago, my uncle Nematullah went to Las Vegas and he bought this blue velour leisure suit. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, this just caught on with all the males in my family. And they would stand around at family gatherings and they would be touching each other's forearms and commenting, oh, wow, this is really thick velour. Look, it doesn't even wrinkle. And they would just have conversations, endless conversations about the qualities of blue velour pantsuits. And my father has so many of them, and they all look exactly alike to me. Mm-hmm. But apparently there is a lot of nuance between different types.
But he will wear a full suit and tie on an airplane.
Always. You know, my dad's in his 80s, and to him, flying is a special occasion. So he always wears a suit on airplanes, and he's always very polite to the flight attendants, and he always thanks them for whatever they bring him, which is not very much these days on airplanes. Yeah. But nonetheless, you know, he'll get the cup of coffee, and he says, oh, this is very good coffee. Thank you very much.
I want to ask about your days as a U.S. college student. You went to Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley.
I did.
And didn't feel as if you exactly fit in.
No, because I thought that when I went to Berkeley, it would be a whole bunch of really smart kids sitting around having interesting conversations. And as a freshman, I discovered it was a lot of smart kids drinking. And it's not that I had anything against drinking, but it's not like the European way of enjoying a glass of wine. It's drinking so they don't remember the weekend, which seems really stupid to me. So I kept looking for groups that didn't drink, and like I joined this church group at one point, and I was right, they didn't drink. But then when they found out I was Muslim, they were so excited because they thought, wow, here's a project sent from above. So that idea ended, and I kept going from group to group. And oddly enough, this all changed for me when I met the man who's now my husband, because and he's European, he's from France, and his idea of fun was exactly what mine was, which was to go to a movie, go to a foreign movie, go to an ethnic restaurant, and then discuss the movie afterwards for hours. So
he had the most extraordinarily subtle line to you, didn't he? One of your first conversations.
He did. We just recently met, and he said to me, we're actually having a deep conversation. And in the middle of it, he said, well, I thought, he said, you've quite a chest there. And I was very offended. I thought that was a very creepy thing to say in the middle of a conversation about something that has nothing to do with chests. And so I told him that I thought that was very creepy. And then he said, but no, I meant it as a compliment. And I said, well, it's still creepy. And this went back and forth. And then he said, but all I said is, you're quite a jester. So,
do you always have your mind in the gutter?
But then I told him, though, that he shouldn't use the word jester. I said, nobody in America uses the word jester. So I made him feel like it was his fault.
Tell us how you became a professional writer, because this wasn't a straight path for you.
No, not at all. My father is a storyteller, and he is actually the funniest person that I know. And I never, ever grew up thinking that I was even remotely funny. And when I was about 36 years old, and I had 2 children by then, I wanted my children to know my stories, just like I knew my father's stories. But because I live in America, and in America, people don't get together with their families all the time the way my extended family does. So I decided I was going to write down my stories. And when my then youngest started kindergarten, I joined a writer's group. And this was after 8 years of being a stay-at-home mom. And I remember that first day in kindergarten so well, because I was the only mom not crying. And I joined this writer's group, and
not crying because you were so glad to have a little peace and quiet.
Listen, 8 years of having someone Velcro to your hip and, you know, getting all of a sudden 2.5 hours to yourself or 3 hours just seemed like a week in Hawaii to me. So, I joined this writer's group and I started writing these stories about my life. And after September 11th happened, a friend of mine suggested that I should try to get them published because, as she pointed out, there was nothing out there that had anything to do with the Middle East that was remotely funny. Although now there are two books.
Yours and?
Both of mine.
All right. Fair enough. You have an essay in here where you're the mother of an adolescent girl. And you say that you're grateful that your daughter doesn't have to wear a headscarf. But you're alarmed at what adolescent girls can sometimes find themselves wearing in this country. If I get you to talk about what happened going clothes shopping.
Well, I just, you know, my daughter is almost 13. And when she was younger, it was fine going clothes shopping because the clothes were appropriate for her age. And around the time she turned about 8 or 9, I noticed that fashions for her were, well, let's just say inappropriate. And it always surprises me that in this country where girls are supposed to be empowered, that the clothing for them is getting them ready for careers at Hooters. So before we go shopping, there's always this lecture I have to give on what I think is appropriate and what I think is inappropriate.
You set down some rules, don't you?
I do.
So one rule, in particular.
Well, one rule I had was nothing could be written on the derriere because I had noticed there was a trend where there were pants that said juicy on the bottom. And, you know, if an adult woman chooses to wear that, that's one thing. But 9, 10, 11-year-old girls, I don't think they really understand the full effect of wearing something that says juicy on the bottom.
Can you tell us about Miss Sandberg, your old teacher?
Oh, I love Mrs. Sandberg. Mrs. Sandberg was my second grade teacher. I still keep in touch with her. She now lives in Utah. And it's so funny because now whenever we talk, she says, oh, call me Bonnie. And I'm always like, no, Mrs. Sandberg, I don't think so.
Yeah.
She was the teacher I had when I came to America when I didn't speak any English. And she really prepared her students ahead of time. She had told them that there was this new student coming who didn't speak the language. And she told the students to be nice to me and to include me in everything. And they did. And I always say it's just amazing the difference that one good teacher can make at a pivotal time in your life.
Yeah.
And I certainly did my part in trying to ingratiate myself with my new American classmates. And I used to always write their names for them on the board in Persian. And in Persian, we write from right to left. So it's very impressive. And the kids would say, ooh, you write backwards. And then all the boys would always chase me at recess, and they'd say, teach us some bad words in your language. But I'll tell you, though, I think I had the last laugh, because one day I said, okay, fine, I'm going to teach you something, but it's so bad, you've got to promise never to repeat it. And they said, okay, we promise. I said, okay, man haram, never repeat that. And of course, from that day on, they ran around saying, man haram, man haram, man haram, which means I'm an idiot.
Well, all right. So now you're a well-known humorist, and they're probably still running around yelling, I'm an idiot.
Well, I think they're in bars trying to pick up on Iranian women and saying, man haram, and wondering why it's not working.
Well, Firuzeh, very nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Firuzeh Duma. Her new book is Laughing Without an Accent, Adventures of an Iranian American at Home and Abroad. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News, Montreux. I'm Scott Simon.